This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas representing Transitions Life Care. Mary, how are you?
I'm doing well. I have a new foster dog who's given me all the positive views of life lately. That's a whole nother episode we can get into.
Positive views. I like what you did there. Positive views with your
canine
inch
tails. Oh, I didn't even mean to.
See, you just stumble into this stuff. You're so good at it. Well, we've got a show that we've been pretty excited to do for a while. We mentioned this on our show about falls a few weeks back, and we got into a discussion on Tai Chi. And so we really wanted to dive more in depth on the benefits of Tai Chi, and we are very pleased to have on the show today Susan Lee. Susan is owner and head instructor of Body and Brain Yoga Tai Chi. Susan, thanks so much for being on with us today.
Well, I'm very grateful and honored to be here.
Susan, before we dive into a little bit about what is Tai Chi, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
All right. So here at Body and Brain, we offer classes and workshops and private sessions to help people with self-healing. That's really what this practice is all about. So our focus is actually more on Qigong. So Tai Chi is actually a form of Qigong, but I'll get into, I'm sure you'll have leading questions on that. And it's all about circulating energy. It's about helping us connect our minds to our body. So it is a mind-body practice.
Wow. So, okay, now you're exactly right. questions about that. What is Qigong, and then how does that filter down into what is Tai Chi?
All right. So Qigong is a larger umbrella that covers basically energy movement to circulate energy, right? And then Tai Chi is the formalized set of steps and things like that that are related to moving that energy, or what the way we like to call it is movement with unlimited energy.
Wow. So what is the purpose of Tai Chi? I know we had a show a couple weeks ago where one of our physician assistant partners out in the community came on and talked about the benefits for preventing falls in seniors. And we were so excited to find you and so that you could come on and tell us more about the purpose of Tai Chi. My grandfather used to do Tai Chi before, and I was so intrigued. So talk to us a little bit more about some of the purposes and who can benefit from Tai Chi.
All right, so the primary thing about Tai Chi is connecting the mind to the body. In this modern age, we're very distracted. Mm-hmm. Our brains are very scattered and thinking about lots of other things, and we don't connect to feeling our body a lot. And you know, you bring up the issue with, falls, particularly as we get older. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we've lost that connection. So we're not as aware of our feet, or we're not aware of where we are in space. So what Tai Chi does is help to bring your focus back to being present, to because your body can't go to the future. It can't go to the past. It is only in the here and now. So when you're feeling your body, you're much more aware of your environment, you know, where you are physically as well as where you are mentally and emotionally.
Mm. So who can benefit from something like Tai Chi? Do you have to be like an athlete and physically fit to be able to benefit from it, or is it something that anyone can do?
Gosh, no. This is something that, you know, little kids, all the way up to aging seniors, even into, you know, folks that have mobility issues. Mm-hmm. Tai Chi is something that you can also do from a chair. So it doesn't matter what your physical condition is or your age. It is something everyone can do.
So you offer Tai Chi classes at Body and Brain. What does a typical Tai Chi class look like?
Well, my particular classes, and again, we focus more here on Qigong. Mm-hmm. Tai Chi tends to be the very formalized, learning-specific sets of steps, where your hands are, where your feet are. Here we want to focus more on helping you connect and feel energy. So to do that, we tend to start our classes with some sensitizing exercises. So we start things like body tapping, just to wake up your body to increase circulation. We'll do some joint opening exercises, because if your joints are stiff, then energy doesn't get through very easily. Mm-hmm. And then we start moving into the energy movements, bringing that focus back in, slow movement to, you know, focusing as well as connecting movement with the breath. Mm-hmm. So it's also, so you can think of Tai Chi or Qigong as a moving meditation. So that's kind of the flow of the class. And then usually by the end of the class, everyone feels relaxed, but energized at the same time.
Interesting. Is there any benefits with these classes in sleep? It's something that we all probably need more of in our life, including myself, especially after this daylight savings time. I guess I needed that hour after all. Does Tai Chi and Qigong have benefits for sleep?
Well, certainly, because the whole point is by calming your brain down, You're bringing your focus back to your body, you are helping to decrease your stress level. A lot of the reason we cannot sleep is because our minds are constantly going. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually allow our brains to rest. Sitting in front of the television is not really resting your brain, all right? But bringing your mind to your body and being very present and eliminating the distractions and all the other things that go with modern life is helping you to help calm the brain down, so that when you are ready to sleep, then you are, your brain is kind of in a better state, as opposed to being, you know, still constantly running about what do I got to do today or what do I got to do tomorrow or, you know, whatever it is. So it's all about helping to decrease that stress response. So by calming the brain, calming the body, then you can get some better sleep.
You must know my nightly routine, because I sit in front of the television every single night. I probably should take that TV out of my room and maybe practice some of these things. And speaking of that, are there ways that our listeners can start to incorporate these practices into daily life before attending a class?
Certainly. There's, matter of fact, we offer a lot of little mini sessions of Tai Chi and meditation on our YouTube channel. We have a Body and Brain TV and a Brain Education TV YouTube channels. So if they want to just try a few, you know, 10, 15 minute videos just to see how this helps. We have some specifically for sleep, some interesting exercises. So that's something they can certainly start before actually attending the class. But the class also provides you a chance to share energy with people. Learning from a YouTube video is one thing, but that has a very different energy to it. And then you're still having to think about what you're seeing, as opposed to having somebody guide you so you can focus totally on what you are doing and what you are feeling. That's one of the key things that we focus on here is feel. Don't think.
So how would someone find your channel, your YouTube videos, and how does someone find out more about Body and Brain before we dive into yoga in our next segment?
Right. So like I said, with the YouTube, you can just go onto the YouTube channel. You can put in Body ampersand Brain, and then you should see our Body and Brain TV channel, or you can put the phrase Brain Education TV, and then you can find us on that. Our websites, you can go to body-nbrain.com, and we do have centers across the country, so hopefully you can find a center near you.
Wonderful. We're speaking with Susan Lee. She's owner and head instructor of Body and Brain Yoga Tai Chi. We're going to continue our conversation, as Mary alluded to. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into the yoga aspect of things, and we'll do that right after this. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com with your host, Mary Lucas and Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas. Our guest on the line is Susan Lee. Susan is owner and head instructor of Body and Brain Yoga Tai Chi, and we are talking about Tai Chi and yoga as well. We just spent a segment sort of diving into what Tai Chi is, and now we want to focus a little bit more on the yoga side of things, Mary.
Yes, it's something that more people, I think, have heard about or experienced. We've talked a lot about Tai Chi. So, Susan, tell us a little bit about the differences between Tai Chi and yoga.
Well, let's go back to where the similarities are, because really they're both mind-body practices. It's all about helping you connect your mind to your body. Now, the yoga tradition does tend to focus more on the stretching aspects of it or staying in particular postures. So what's a little bit different about the type of yoga that we teach here at Body and Brain is that ours is more Korean-based. The vast majority of yoga that you find in the U.S. is more based out of the Indian tradition. And there are many different styles of yoga that are out there. What we tend to focus on here is, again, opening up energy channels, which the Indian system is also based on as well, but they do tend to focus more on postures. In our tradition, we tend to focus more on stretching to open up the energy or meridian channels that you have in your body.
Interesting. My mom, this shout out to my mom, has been trying to get me to do yoga for a while, and she said it would be very beneficial for me. It's so hard for me. You said mind, body, and I'm just thinking, yep, that's it. That's why I can't do it, because I cannot relax my mind. They do that one thing at the end of class where you lay there for a few minutes and close your eyes and try to let go of everything, and all I can think of is I am hungry. And what is for dinner? And that's where my brain goes. And it's so hard for me to let my mind let go of that. You talked a little bit about some of the different kinds of yoga, Korean. What are some of the other types of yoga and outside of the things that you practice as well?
You've probably heard of things like there's vinyasa, there's hatha, there's kundalini. There's many different types, Bikram yoga. They all have slightly different approaches, but they're still mostly based on, you know, postures that you hold for a while to help you with your centering. It helps you with balance, things of that nature. That isn't quite, you know, what we focus on here, which is more about, again, opening, releasing where you have the tension in your body. Well, first thing is feeling where you have that tension so that you can let go of it. So you talk about the difficulty and the fact that your mind wants to go other places. Our practice, we keep cueing you to help you bring your focus back to your body. So you're not thinking about, you know, what you're having for dinner or things like that. But again, learning how to be in the here and now.
Are there some benefits of doing yoga for seniors or older adults?
Certainly. I mean, a lot of the biggest problem with seniors is they probably don't move as much as they certainly did when they were younger. So whatever yoga they do, whether it's the chair yoga, whether it's, you know, any, you know, traditional yoga or what we teach, the point is moving, is increasing that energy circulation. When we don't move, the energy gets stagnant, and then that's when things start going south. You know, and that's when we start developing aches and pains, because that's what pain is. That's stagnant energy that's not moving.
Can you do, you know, I asked this question similar to in Tai Chi. Is it something that you can do from a chair, or can it be adapted for those that are living with physical conditions that may be limit particular movements? I know that, you know, I just had knee surgery, for instance. It's not necessarily just aging people. Is there ways to adapt movements around injuries or, you know, surgery and recovery and still practice yoga?
Definitely, definitely. There's quite a few programs that are out there that do offer, you know, chair yoga or supported yoga or adaptive yoga. There's lots of programs out there. I can do that in my classes. Everything can be modified depending on what your condition is. So you don't have to be super fit, super strong, or super flexible. There are programs out there that you can probably do, but you have to ask the questions.
Absolutely. You know, you said earlier mind and body, and a part of that I know and something that you all do is meditation. And this is probably mm-hmm. where I have the most trouble. Mm-hmm. It can seem very daunting. The sound of meditation seems daunting to me. Where do you even begin in a meditation practice, and what does that look like?
The easiest meditation is to just focus on your breath. Just even counting your breathing is probably the easiest meditation. So a lot of people tend to think of meditation as, sitting, in lotus posture and saying om and things of that nature. And that isn't really what meditation is. It's all about bringing your outward focus mind inward. Feeling. And so, again, focusing on feeling your body helps you to bring that focus in. So things like counting your breathing mm-hmm. is definitely helping you make that connection. That is the easiest meditation anyone can do. So even if you count, each inhale and exhale is one breath, trying to count 10 breaths without thinking about anything else mm-hmm. can be difficult. So, but that's a good start.
That's very helpful. Is it something that you can do anywhere? I'm thinking I'm going to sit in a traffic jam on the way home from work. Is there a way that you can meditate in that moment to try to recenter and maybe not get so frustrated on your way home?
Right, exactly. So breathing is something you can do anywhere. You don't even have to close your eyes. You can still, if you need to, if you're driving, still keep your focus outward. But ideally, you want to be in some place where you can have some quiet and be able to reflect inside. If you're driving, you still have to keep your mind somewhat outside. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of counterproductive to meditation. But in terms of calming yourself, certainly a breathing exercise would be very helpful.
Absolutely. As we finish out here with our show, do you offer introductory classes for all of these things? What do you offer at Body and Brain? And again, how can people find out more about you?
Right. So we offer, you can come in for a trial class. We offer different classes across the week here. We offer classes that focus a little bit more on core strengthening. We do more that focus more on stretching, coordination, and balance. And then I have the classes that are focused more on the Qigong. But they're welcome to try any of those classes. We also offer a private introductory session, where they can come in one-on-one, and we can talk about what their wellness goals are, and we can check things like their flexibility, their balance, and breathing, and then discuss, what programs may could benefit, that we offer for them and what their goals are. But yeah, again, you can find us at bodythenbrain.com. But here I'm in Raleigh, so it's bodyandbrain.com/Raleigh. You can go to our website and you can see what we offer right there on our website.
Wonderful. I don't know about you, Jason, but I've got some work to do.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
I've got to recenter my mind, and maybe shout out to my mom. I'll try yoga and start this year off better than I did last year. Thank you so much, Susan, for coming on and for sharing everything that you all do at Body and Brain.
You're very welcome, and thank you so much for having me today.
It is our pleasure. Again, that was Susan Lee, owner and head instructor of Body and Brain Yoga Tai Chi. Very informative stuff. I mean, I think mm-hmm. that if we could all just incorporate that, even just a little bit of time a week mm-hmm. into our lives, mm-hmm. it would make a big difference. Because, I think a lot of us maybe have a little bit of hesitation when it comes to yoga or Tai Chi, but everyone that I know who does those things just absolutely loves them. I've never heard of anyone who's like, yoga, not for me.
Right,
Tai Chi, tried it, hated it. That really doesn't happen. So it just sounds like there's really no downside to it. So something for us all to think about, especially as we mentioned a few weeks back, if balance or, falls are something that you're worried about, this is certainly worth a shot. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one with Mary Lucas and Jason Kong. If you have questions for the show, you can email agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. I'm Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas. Hey, don't forget, if you want to find more information about Transitions Life Care, you can go online to transitionslifecare.org, transitionslifecare.org. Mary, we're going to shift gears here a little bit and broach a topic that I think everyone is pretty much familiar with, and we all probably have a healthy fear of, but it's always good to address it. And so we're going to spend some time here talking about diabetes. And we are very pleased to welcome onto the show Missy Jernigan. She is a certified diabetes educator with the WakeMed Diabetes Management Program. Missy, thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you, guys. I'm so grateful to be here.
Thank you for joining us, Missy. I think that this is sometimes can be a confusing topic, especially for the aging population. I think many people think about diabetes as a childhood disease or something you find very early in life. And I am starting to realize that maybe this isn't always true. Missy, can you talk to us? Is that really true? Can you develop diabetes later in life, or is this really something that's onset from childhood and maybe you find it later in life? So maybe talk to us a little bit about that to kick us off.
Sure. There are really about three main types of diabetes, and the one that you're talking about is type 1. It used to be called juvenile diabetes because it normally affects people before the age of 30. And usually, you know, we see it in adolescence. But that would be type 1. Type 2 is mostly seen in people above the age of 40. And type 2 is more than 95%, between 90 and 95% of all diabetes. However, we have seen a big increase of the incidence of people in who are much younger getting diabetes type 2. And then the third type that we normally see is diabetes in pregnancy, which sometimes is transient. It's only during pregnancy. So sometimes it can last after pregnancy, but usually once the baby's born, the diabetes disappears.
Wow. So is there anything that you can attribute to the increase that you all are seeing in the type 2 diabetes for these people over 40? Is there anything that's pointing to it? Is there research going on to kind of dive in there? What can you tell us about that?
The type 2 in people over the age of 40?
Mm-hmm.
That is the majority of most diabetes. I guess most people don't know that because juvenile diabetes tends to be advertised and talked mm-hmm. about, but the elderly population, I dare say elderly over 40, but people above 40, I know, people above 40 tend to have much higher incidence of diabetes than the juvenile population.
Is there anything that is creating this greater risk to develop diabetes for the aging population or those over 40? Are there any causes that increase that risk for developing diabetes later in life?
Well, we tend to carry a few more pounds than previous generations. That's one thing. The other thing is that we are living longer, so we have an extended period of time to develop it. Thirdly, I think some of the foods that we eat and the lack of activity that we do tend to bring it on a little better or a little quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the medications we take tend to cause it, even without any family history as well.
Wow, that's interesting. So if you've, I know that there out there, you can be diagnosed with prediabetes, and that might be a term that when you're at your physician's office, it might come up and something to be worried about. What does prediabetes mean, and are there ways that you can combat that now to prevent it from becoming type 2 diabetes?
That's a great question. Prediabetes is reversible, And it is the precursor to type 2, which is the older type of diabetes. Some of the main things you can do is get checked often as your physician will say so. Usually over the age of 40 or 45, they start checking for that. But if they do tell you you have it, you want to concentrate on diet, exercise, and of course, close follow-up.
That's good to know. Are there different screenings for people with diabetes, and how often do these screenings take place, or how often should you be checking this once you've been diagnosed with diabetes?
Once you've been diagnosed with diabetes, okay. The A1C blood test is the most valuable one we use right now. Another good one is random blood sugars. So I'm going to talk about A1C first. An A1C test tells us your average blood sugar for the past 3 months. And once it gets to 6.5% or higher, you have screened positive for diabetes. A fasting blood sugar above 126, repeatable several times, is diagnostic for type 2 diabetes as well.
Mm. So what other complications that are related to diabetes are of concern in our older populations? Are there any comorbidities that would exacerbate diabetes or things that we should be concerned about?
Absolutely. So we know that hypertension or high blood pressure definitely in combination with diabetes tend to be a pretty serious thing. But some of the complications we're going to see for uncontrolled diabetes tend to be blindness, amputations, heart disease, kidney failure leading to dialysis, and even strokes.
Yeah, that's some scary stuff. Missy, you know, for those who maybe aren't taking diabetes as seriously as they should, I mean, you've gone over some complications there, but on a daily basis, how does having diabetes impact your life, and what are, you know, how does it, you know, create a life for you that's maybe not as convenient as it was pre-diabetes?
Convenience is a good word to use. It's not as convenient as somebody who doesn't have diabetes. You do need to check your blood sugars as often as your physician asks. And the goal, of course, is to keep the blood sugars controlled, because that's what leads to the complications. We do now have something called a continuous glucose monitor that you can wear on your arm so that you do not have to poke your fingers 3 or 4 times a day. And it measures your blood sugar as often as every 5 minutes, so that it can be reported on your smartphone or a pager-sized device called a reader. And so that you can, at any minute during the day, see what your blood sugar is. Some of these CGMs, or continuous glucose monitors, also have alarms that will let you know if your blood sugar is going too high or going too low. And I will admit, I wore one for a while just to see what it was like so I could teach better about it. And it was absolutely life-changing.
How would you recognize signs of someone with low blood glucose with cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's that may have other cognitive issues or make it a little bit harder to catch?
And that is exactly where I would use a CGM. With Alzheimer's, you know, there's already the cognitive issues. So sometimes you may see a little more confusion, different than what you normally see in an Alzheimer's patient. You may see tiredness, either low or high blood sugars. So if I had somebody that had Alzheimer's or another cognitive issue, I would love to get a prescription for a CGM so that the caretaker could know what was going on without having to guess.
We are speaking with Missy Jernigan, and Missy is a certified diabetes educator with the WakeMed Diabetes Management Program. And we've got so many more questions related to diabetes for her, and we're looking forward to her expertise in that regard, and we hope you are too. So stick around. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News Talk. Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you. It's a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care, right here on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News Talk Traffic. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas. Our guest on the line is Missy Jernigan, and Missy is a certified diabetes educator with the WakeMed Diabetes Management Program, and surprise, we're talking all about diabetes. And Mary, there's just so much we have to cover here in the next segment, so let's get right back to it.
Yes, I want to shift a little bit and talk about the caregiver perspective of helping someone with diabetes, your loved one with diabetes. As a caregiver, Missy, what are ways that you can become more educated to help your loved one?
Ask questions, ask questions, ask questions. So, of course, when you love someone, it's natural to want to help. So one of the first things you can do is make sure that you understand the medications that they're taking, how to give them, when to give them, and the side effects.
That's a very good tip. I think that for many people who have diabetes, it's hard to, you know, it's a very constant thing that you're paying attention to, watching, you know, you're very aware of what you're eating, your medication, and the management of your disease. How do you avoid, as a caregiver, being the diabetes police and really driving your loved one crazy, trying to also manage it as a caregiver and kind of being on top of it? Are there tips that you have for caregivers to avoid being this filling this diabetes police role?
Yes, I do have a couple of ideas. You know, we just want to help as the diabetes police people, our caregivers, but it can also cause strife in the relationship, and that's not always good. The one thing I would like to always ask is that we make the individual as self-helping as much as they can be. If there's even one little thing that that person can do for themselves, teach them how to do it so that they're involved in their own care. Ask them if they want chicken or beef. Ask them if they'd like green beans or broccoli, that kind of thing. So make sure that they have a role in their own care, know how to do as much as they know how, and then try your best not to truly be a police officer, but a guide.
That's great advice. And Missy, we love what you do, but as much as we love what you do, I think we'd all like for our family members not to have to go visit you. So what are some tips that you have for those who, you know, could be high risk for diabetes? What lifestyle changes could we be making to make sure, or at least prevent seeing you as much as possible?
Consistency. Try to always make sure you get enough water in, as long as your physician says you're allowed to. Try to limit your starchy foods. Now, a lot of people think sugar is the only thing that causes high blood sugars, but it's any kind of starchy food, such as bread, potatoes, rice, pasta, and believe it or not, even fruit. So a lot of people think because it's a natural sugar that it doesn't cause your blood sugars to go up. Make sure that you're eating fresh foods instead of canned, and the second best would be frozen after fresh.
Gotcha. That's good advice. And, you know, little changes like that can really go a long way.
Mm-hmm. You know, something that I've heard in talking with patients before, or my grandmother even mentioned it, back in the day, but shoes are so important for those with diabetes. I think that maybe diabetes patients might be more likely to have infections from and feet. I know, Missy, you mentioned it earlier in the show, are something that's it's very important to keep an eye on as a caregiver for those with diabetes. Can you talk to us a little bit about the daily grooming, why it's so important for someone with diabetes to, or a caregiver, to kind of have a close eye on these things? And diabetic shoes, those are a thing, aren't they?
They really are. And you don't want to necessarily pick out your own shoes when you have diabetes, especially if you've had diabetes for at least 10 to 15 years, because some of the sensation on your feet do decrease if your blood sugars haven't been really great. So you want to have somebody size the shoes for you, because if you can't feel a blister that your shoes may be too tight causing it, then you will end up with an ulcer or so. You don't want to walk around barefooted, even in your own house. And if a blister or a sore develops, please don't do your own surgery.
That's very helpful.
Yeah, that's good advice. Missy, you know, we've introduced you as a certified diabetes educator with the WakeMed Diabetes Management Program. Can you tell us a little bit about the WakeMed Diabetes Management Program, how that works, and who's eligible to use this service?
Absolutely. Anybody is eligible. We do have inpatient services for the patients that come to WakeMed, Cary, North, and Raleigh campuses. We have outpatient services that are fed through primary care physicians and also the inpatients that come to WakeMed. We have a diabetes support group as well, and this is a virtual thing. You can find it on the WakeMed web or WakeMed site, or call 919-350-2198. It happens on Wednesdays, the first Wednesday of each month, from 6 to 8 p.m.
And are these classes virtual, or are they in person, or do you have a hybrid option for folks?
We have both right now. We have virtual and we have in person.
This is such a great resource. I've learned so much today, and we really appreciate Missy. I'm literally looking at my water bottle right now. I need to prevent this in the future. I've also took the dogs for a walk this morning, so I need to get a little bit ahead of this. Watching my food intake, the Italian food has been heavy lately, so I need to just be a little bit careful. I think especially with COVID, we've seen, you know, people have gotten a little bit loose on maybe their eating habits, and I'm sure that we all should be a little more aware of what we're doing to prevent type 2 diabetes in the future.
Yeah, Missy, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. If you want to learn more about the WakeMed Diabetes Education Team and the WakeMed Diabetes Management Program, you can Google that, and it comes up pretty quick. WakeMed Diabetes Management Program, that'll be the top result for you there. And the phone number that Missy gave out earlier is 919-350-2198. 919-350-2198. Missy Jernigan, she's a certified diabetes educator with the WakeMed Diabetes Management Program. Missy, thank you so much for your time and for your expertise today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Missy, we appreciate your time as well. Don't forget, if you want to learn more about Transitions Life Care, head on over to transitionslifecare.org. TransitionsLifeCare.org. We're out of time for today. On behalf of Mary Lucas, I'm Jason Kong. Thanking you so much for joining us here on Aging Matters. Care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.